For Connecticut Public Radio, I'm John Henry Smith. The worldwide demonstrations of the last 2 weeks have been in protest of police brutality, and yet, every night we turn on the news, we see images of police acting brutally against unarmed people in the midst of these protests. Joining me now is a man who has represented a good number of victims of police brutality, Bridgeport-based attorney Antonio Ponvere. Antonio, you'd think with all of the cameras trained on these protests, police would be on their best behavior. What does it say to you about the culture of policing in this country or the demands put on them that so many of these police officers are not on their best behavior?
What that says to me is that the culture of policing has become very, very comfortable with use of lethal force, deadly force, in circumstances where it is not necessarily justified or totally unjustified, and that the police are quite comfortable that they won't be held accountable. So it's disheartening, to say the least, and it reminds me very much of cases I've had in the past, all of which, without exception, arose out of a failure of leadership in the departments to rein in rogue officers, to prevent practices out on the street that everyone, the supervisors of the police, all the way up to the commissioners and the chiefs of police, know are improper, know are illegal. And they continue to be used. And the reason that they continue to be used is because the police are not held accountable. And they're not held accountable inside their departments. They're not held accountable very often in the courts of law, because the law is such that it protects police. The legislation is terrible. The cases out of the Supreme Court for the last 20 years have given the police immunities and defenses against even the most brutal force against citizens. And so this is what happens.
Let's talk about other methods of accountability. What can be done to make police keep their body cameras on? You see enough cases out here of them being outfitted with these devices, and then when something happens, they say, oh, too bad, didn't have it turned on.
Yeah, they need to be fired, and the judges who have cases in front of them where the evidence has now been destroyed by the defendant needs to allow for the juries to have every adverse inference that they possibly can.
Is Connecticut policing on par with what you perceive is going on in other areas? Are they behind the curve or are they ahead of the curve in terms of police brutality, in terms of relating to communities of color?
What I hear about what's going on in Los Angeles and New York sounds worse to me than what I know is happening in Connecticut. The New Haven chief of police came out with a statement after George Floyd's death and made a public statement backed up by what looked to be many dozens of his officers. And I don't think that would have happened in previous administrations under previous chiefs of police. And there was an effort a number of years ago in Bridgeport. There was a chief of police who was hired from outside the city, outside the state, who was an African-American gentleman. And he tried to enforce and begin something called community policing, which is an effort to have relations between the police and the citizens be something other than antagonistic. You know, he lost his job after not very long. His frustration level at fighting against transigent racist cops in the leadership of the department and a lack of support from outside, I think, drove him away. So I think the only reason there are fewer incidents in New Haven or Bridgeport or Waterbury or Hartford than there are in Manhattan or Los Angeles is because there's simply fewer people. And there's fewer opportunities for police and citizens to interact.
In all of these protests, you've seen countless cries to defund the police. You hear that and you think what?
It doesn't make any sense. Defunding as an overall withdrawal of money, I think would have a negative impact. What I would say is defund militarized weapons. I would say fund staffing. I would say fund community relations, fund training, and fund discipline and investigations. And so I wouldn't take money away from the departments, except in the cases where I represent people, where if there is an unconstitutional use of force that results in the death of somebody, and their family, either with me as representing them or somebody else, brings a lawsuit against the department and against that police officer and wins a verdict, that money should come out of the police department's budget. There has to be a direct connection between misconduct and punishment. If that money comes out of the general coffers of the city of Bridgeport, the only people that are going to suffer are the very people that are already suffering from the lack of training and the use of excessive force.
What you hear so often is that, you know, most officers are really good. It's just a few bad apples. But we see so many times that officers who speak up, officers who try to point out misconduct are demoted or eventually fired. I mean, you see that example countless times around the country. Do the few bad apples in the barrel just spoil the barrel?
You know, I don't agree with the premise that it's just a few officers, which is why I said leadership in part of my previous answer. So there are rogue officers. There always have been. There always will be. The problem we're having now is that what would, under ordinary circumstances with good leadership, be viewed as intolerable conduct on the job has now become in some ways so normalized that even cops, even officers who want to behave well are in a culture where that becomes impossible.
Perfect example of that was, you probably saw the footage from Buffalo last night, where
yes,
the two officers knocked the 75-year-old man over, and one of the officers who knocked him over was clearly trying to reach down and help the man up, but this guy must have been his supervisor. He seemed to be giving some orders out there. He picked him up and said, "Nope, don't do that. Get up, keep walking." You know, so that guy was foreseeably a good apple who was convinced by the culture to be a bad apple.
I think that's a perfect example. I think that's a perfect example. And think of it from the standpoint of the police officer, too. I mean, they're in circumstances. First of all, these are peaceful protests that are going on right now. But even take an example of a riot where there is some danger to the officers, and that's something that does happen. So they're in a high stress situation to begin with, where every cell of their being is going to be thinking about their own survival. That's when you need leadership and training, because that's when these violations are most likely to occur, and that's when you're going to see examples like the 75-year-old man who was pushed over, and everyone else will sort of fall into lockstep to remove the offending officer from the position to cover up what happened. I mean, I think the George Floyd killing is such an extreme example of this. Chauvin wasn't the only one there. You know, there were three other officers on the scene
who were all junior. One of those guys had been on the job like this. One of the guys, it was his first full shift, or first or third, I can't remember. And then another guy had just hired on like 3 days ago or 4 days ago. They felt no power, obviously.
Yeah, no power. And so, you know, you can feel for somebody under those circumstances. And again, who I would blame there is not the officer who's been on the job for 4 days. I mean, they may have plenty of blame and there's a lot to go around. But who I would really blame there are the people who trained that officer. What happened at the police academy that allowed three officers to come out onto the street with the ability to use lethal force against American citizens who have tasers and guns? Who have the ability to choke hold people or put their weight on someone's neck until they're dead.
See,
what happened?
You're touching on a very interesting point, and this goes into another question I had for you. When I mentioned to an attorney friend of mine that police killed George Floyd over a $20 fake bill and Eric Garner over a $1 Lucy cigarette, my friend said, well, police are within their legal rights to put their hands on you to uphold the law. And my question is, should that be always the case? Is there an argument for severely limiting the police's right to physically assault someone who is not presenting any clear and imminent danger to the public?
If the police have probable cause, they can arrest you. If you resist arrest, they can use the force necessary to get you under control, to put handcuffs on you and get you into the back of the police car. So there's a ton of discretionary decisions that happen between the call saying someone's selling a cigarette on the sidewalk and the use of force against that person. So one of the failures in police training and police culture right now is that nobody seems to understand about de-escalation. Nobody seems to understand and put into practice the idea that every single encounter between a police officer and a citizen doesn't have to result in an arrest. So that's a failure. But even when it's justified, so you have an alleged perpetrator, you have probable cause to arrest them, they are refusing to go into your control. The police have the ability, and they must have the ability, to take that person into custody, but they can't use more force than necessary. And so the George Floyd killing is the most extreme example of this. There was absolutely nothing for 8 minutes and 46 seconds justifying this officer putting his knee on George Floyd's neck. Floyd's on the ground in handcuffs. Put aside that he's pleading for his life, that he can't breathe, and that he's calling for his mother. He's not posing a risk to anybody.
Attorney Antonio Ponvere, thank you so much for the time. Really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Take care.